Chapter 2, The Government of South Carolina. Chapter Preview, People. Carroll Campbell, Thomas Jefferson, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. Places, Columbia. Terms, Special Purpose District, Filibuster, President Pro Tem, Conference Committee, Patronage, Magistrate Court, Probable Cause, Bail, Municipal Court, Probate Court, Family Court, Circuit Court, Masters in Equity, Court of Appeals, Appeal, Supreme Court, Incorporated, Municipality, Political Party, Special Interest Group, Lobbyist, United States Constitution, Bill of Rights. Government is the means by which a society makes and enforces decisions on how its people must behave. The government makes laws that all citizens must obey, and it has the authority to enforce those laws. Government might use fines, imprisonment, or, in extreme cases, death, as means of enforcing rules the institution has decided upon. Government also provides many services that individuals cannot usually provide for themselves. The national government protects its citizens from outside invasion. National, state, and local governments provide education, roads and bridges, water and sewer systems, recreation facilities, some economic security for disabled, unemployed, and elderly citizens, and many other services. Over the centuries, many types of governments have been tried in many different countries. Most of those have been authoritarian, that is, systems that give great power to the government and very little freedom to the people. There are several forms of authoritarian government: monarchy, ruled by one person, a king, emperor, or shah; aristocracy, ruled by a small class of people who inherit their authority; and oligarchy, ruled by only a few people. A dictator usually gains and keeps his power through brute force. His authoritarian regime might go even further in trying to control all aspects of people's lives: political, economic, cultural, educational, and religious. That attempt at total control would be called a totalitarian government. Finally, a few governments have tried the concepts of democracy. Section 1, South Carolina Government Today. As you read, look for the composition and duties of the legislative branch of state government, how a bill becomes a law, the organization of the executive branch and the powers of the governor, the functions of the four tiers of courts in South Carolina, terms, special purpose district, filibuster, president pro tem, conference committee, patronage, magistrate court, probable cause, bail, municipal court, probate court, family court, circuit court, Masters in Equity, Court of Appeals, Appeal, Supreme Court. The long evolution over nearly 3.5 centuries that we will observe in the chapters to come has produced a government that has legitimacy in the eyes of its citizens. It is viewed as reasonably representative of the 4.6 million people it serves. The form of South Carolina's government shares a lot in common with that of other states and the nation. It has three main branches with some built-in checks and balances. Newcomers to South Carolina from other states will be familiar with most of the forms, procedures, and services of our government. Newcomers might be surprised, though, by the fact that the governor is given so few official powers. They might wonder about the legislators meddling so much in the affairs of local governments. Surely the maze of special purpose districts governed by appointed commissioners might bewilder them. A special purpose district is a form of local government created to provide water, sewer, fire control, or other services for a particular area. The legislative branch, the General Assembly. Visitors who walk up the broad marble steps of the State House in Columbia and pass between its massive columns are aware they are entering an architectural masterpiece. Inside, they will discover the most remarkable feature of this impressive building, a large lobby with a huge dome overhead. Pausing a minute to sense the history that has been made here and to notice the paintings and statues, they then notice the huge doors to their right and their left. These doors lead into the House of Representatives and the Senate, two houses even within one branch of government. Citizens want some balance, some way for each house to check the power of the other. This is supposed to force the members of each house to act wisely and honestly. It does not always work out that way, but the concept is still valid. The chief function of the legislature is to make laws. Although it is the only state-level body that can levy taxes, fees, and fines to raise revenue, operating funds for the government, and can authorize the spending of that money, the General Assembly has used this far-reaching power to be the dominant factor in South Carolina's government for three centuries. It has great influence over so many aspects of life, the quality of schools, the condition of roads, the sanitation of restaurants, and the cleanliness of the air. The legislature and its rules. South Carolinians' daily lives are affected in so many ways by the General Assembly, so it is important to know something about how it works in order to be an effective citizen. To be elected to the House of Representatives, one only has to be 21 years of age. Senators have to be 25. The House has one member from each of 124 districts across the state. Each district contains about 37,000 persons whom the House member represents for a two-year term. A senator is elected from one of 46 districts and represents about 100,552 people for a four-year term. There are no limits on re-election possibilities for either House. A member of the General Assembly is not expected to be a full-time professional politician. In fact, the ideal is to be a citizen legislator. The pay is low, requiring that members have other means of subsistence. The legislature meets 3 days a week from early January to early June each year. Committee meetings are sometimes held on other days or in other seasons. Legislators work quite hard if they are conscientious, responsible. Each chamber of the General Assembly has its own complex set of rules. The most successful legislators are those who master the rules and can use them to their advantage. One unique feature of the Senate is the filibuster, a rule that allows almost unlimited debate. That allows a small group or even one member to hold up or even kill a bill by continuing to talk until the leadership will decide to go on to other legislation. A vote of 2/3 of senators is necessary to stop debate and end the filibuster. The House of Representatives does not allow filibusters. A majority vote can shut off debate and bring the bill to a vote. The state constitution gives the House the right to originate all revenue bills. That privilege gives a little edge to the lower house in the balance of power contest. Legislative committees. Both houses do most of their work in committees. The Senate has 15 standing permanent committees. The House has 11. Senators are chosen for committees largely on the basis of their choice, seniority, length of service, and political party. Chairs of committees are elected by the whole Senate. The Speaker of the House appoints all members of House committees and appoints committee chairs. Legislative leaders. The Senate also elects A president pro tem, president for the time being, usually the leader of the majority party. This official has major responsibilities and powers over legislation moving through the Senate. The presiding officer of the Senate is the lieutenant governor, who can vote only in the case of a tie. The House of Representatives elects a speaker, the leader of the majority party in that chamber. The speaker has major authority. He, or she someday, presides when the House is in session and is in a position to make life easy or difficult for a member. The speaker might well have more influence in state government than the governor. How a bill becomes law. When a legislator submits a bill for consideration, something like this will happen. In the first reading, the reading clerk will announce just its title to the chamber. The presiding officer will refer the bill to a committee for study and perhaps revision, and the committee chair may refer the bill to a subcommittee. The bill will probably die in subcommittee for lack of support. Only a fraction of proposed bills actually become law. If the subcommittee likes the bill, it reports it out favorably to the full committee. That committee might send it on to the full chamber for its important second reading. This is the opportunity for all members to debate the bill and try to amend it to improve it, or perhaps to make it unacceptable to a majority. After the debate, the presiding officer calls for the vote. If it receives a majority, it has succeeded, until tomorrow when it comes up for a third reading. But third reading is only a formality. After that vote, the bill goes to the other house for the same treatment. If that chamber passes it and the governor signs it, a new law has been made. However, if the other house made a few changes, it comes back to the original chamber. If that house accepts the changes and the governor signs the bill, it becomes law. If that house rejects the changes, it goes to a conference committee, a committee composed of a few members of each house, which works out the differences between versions of a bill. If both houses accept the changes and the governor signs it, finally a law has been made. It is no wonder that only a fraction of proposed bills become law. It is so easy for a few members, especially if they are experienced and powerful, to kill a bill. Other legislative duties. The General Assembly has several duties and powers beyond making laws. It elects most of the judges in the state. It appoints hundreds of persons to boards and commissions, groups that have a strong hand in running many state agencies. In addition, many of the governor's appointments are made with the advice and consent of the Senate. One of the key duties of the General Assembly is its oversight function. The legislature follows up on the acts it has passed to make sure state agencies are carrying out the intent of the law and spending money properly. The Legislative Audit Council, established in 1974, has become a very important arm of the General Assembly. It can investigate and audit any state agency or department to determine if it is spending funds wisely and according to law. The executive branch, the governor. The governor's role is to carry out the laws passed by the General Assembly, to maintain order, and to be the spokesperson for the state. South Carolinians' experience with the British King in the colonial and revolutionary eras built a distrust of executive authority that has echoed through more than two centuries since. From the Revolution to the Civil War, governors were elected by the General Assembly, were limited to 1 2-year term, and had no veto power. The Constitution of 1895, our fundamental law today, scattered executive authority among so many offices that the governor had very little formal authority. The Constitution allowed 2 2-year terms at first, was amended to allow 1 4-year term, then finally was amended again in 1980 to allow 2 4-year terms. The possibility of longer service in office improved the governor's standing. To run for governor, one has to be a U.S. citizen, at least 30 years of age, who has lived in the state for at least 5 years. If, for any reason, the governor cannot perform the duties of office, the lieutenant governor becomes the governor. The qualifications for office are the same for the lieutenant governor and the governor. Formal powers. The governor's formal powers have improved in the last few decades. In 1993, the General Assembly authorized the governor to submit an executive budget every year for its consideration. This allows the governor to set some priorities and more effectively shape the direction of the state. Also in 1993, the governor was authorized to consolidate 76 state agencies into 13 departments. The department heads would be in the governor's cabinet, and he or she would appoint them and could dismiss them if necessary. Yet the governor continues to be limited by the fact that 7 heads of other departments are still elected independently. Another example of a formal power that has increased the governor's influence is the area of crisis management. The General Assembly grants the chief executive broad powers to deal with crises such as natural disasters and riots. When Hurricane Hugo threatened the state in 1989, Governor Carroll Campbell ordered evacuation of the coastal areas. He ordered law enforcement agencies to respond to the crisis, called out the National Guard, and served as the unifying figure. His response enhanced the prestige of the office and established that the governor was the crisis manager in chief. Finally, the governor has the formal power of veto over acts passed by the General Assembly. Remember that bill that was passed by both houses of the legislature? If the governor disagrees with it, he or she can veto it. Then 2/3 of both houses have to vote to override the veto, otherwise the bill is lost. Informal powers. Though the formal powers of the governor have improved, governors are still very dependent on informal powers of the office to get much of their work done. The informal powers were increased once governors were allowed to serve 2 4-year terms. Since then, 3 of 5 governors have won 2 consecutive terms. Some of the informal powers depend very much on the personality and political skills of the individual governor. Governors must be persuasive, energetic, and skillful in bargaining with legislators. Governors must know how to use patronage, the power to distribute offices and favors in ways that promote the important programs on a government official's agenda. Governors must use their political parties effectively to magnify the reach of their influence and use the mass media to persuade the public that their programs are valuable. Since the 1960s, large streams of federal funds have flowed into the state, making up about 1/3 of the state's budget. These funds go primarily for health measures for children and the elderly, education, transportation, and aid to the unemployed. Governors have great influence over how some of this money is spent, contributing to an increase in the power of the office. The judicial branch, the courts. Probably the least well-known of the 3 equal branches of our state government is the judicial branch. It quietly goes about its business of trying cases in court, rendering judgments, and dispensing justice. The court system absorbs less than 1% of our state's budget. During most of our state's history, the judicial system was a hodgepodge, confused mixture, of courts created by the General Assembly to meet special needs or to satisfy a particular county. In the past 40 years, however, a unified court system has been developed. The new system is administered by the Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court, making our justice system much more uniform all over the state. the lower tier of courts. Most court activity is in the lowest courts, the magistrate, municipal, and probate courts. The magistrate courts, the lowest level of county courts, handle over half of all the cases in the state. Approximately 319 magistrates are theoretically appointed for four-year terms by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. In reality, the senator selects the magistrates within his or her district, and the governor then appoints those persons. Magistrates do not have to be lawyers, and few are, but they must have a college degree and go through special training. Most of the cases concern traffic violations, but the magistrates can try minor criminal and civil cases. An example of a civil case would be this. A dog tore up a neighbor's flower bed, and the neighbor wanted $200 to repair the damage. Magistrates perform another important task in the criminal justice system. A person accused of a serious crime will be brought before a magistrate for a preliminary hearing. The magistrate will decide whether there is probable cause, a reasonable expectation that evidence will be found, to justify sending the accused before a grand jury, which will determine whether the person should go to trial. If so, the magistrate will set the amount of bail, money deposited with the court by the accused to guarantee his or her appearance in court, required. Police also go to magistrates for search warrants and arrest warrants, authorizing them to arrest someone not caught in the act of a crime. Municipal courts are courts established by towns and cities. Municipal judges, elected by city councils, deal with cases similar to the magistrate courts, except they do not try civil cases. Like magistrates, these judges do not have to be lawyers. Probate courts are courts that deal primarily with wills and estates. Each county has a probate court, and the judge is elected by the people in the county for a four-year term. They do not have to be lawyers, but most are. Probate courts see that the wills of deceased persons are carried out. They also act as guardians for persons incapable of handling their own affairs, the mentally incompetent, the chemically dependent, and minors. Probate judges determine whether a person must be involuntarily committed to treatment for mental illness or substance addiction. Finally, they have the happier duty of issuing marriage licenses. The second tier of courts. Family courts deal with divorce, child custody, visitation rights, alimony, property settlements, and termination of parental rights. They also have jurisdiction over juveniles accused of most crimes. There are over 50 family court judges elected by the General Assembly for six-year terms. They must be lawyers. The Circuit Court is the court of general jurisdiction. It has charge of all cases except minor ones handled by the magistrate and municipal courts, and special subject cases handled by family and probate courts. The Circuit Court hears both criminal and civil cases. Although it is primarily a trial court, the Circuit Court also hears appeals from the magistrate, municipal, and probate courts. The state is divided into 16 circuits. Each circuit must have at least one resident judge, but the judges rotate around the circuits on a schedule arranged by the Office of Court Administration. The circuit judges are elected by the General Assembly for six-year terms. They must be lawyers. The 21 Masters in Equity in the state serve as an extension of the Circuit Court. They are appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the General Assembly for four-year terms. The cases referred by the Circuit Court to the Masters usually involve property. The Master tries to determine what is equitable or fair for all sides in a property dispute. Masters also conduct sales of land on which the owners have failed to pay taxes. The third tier of courts, the Court of Appeals. Until the 1980s, the only appeals court in the state was the South Carolina Supreme Court. At that time, a new intermediate appeals court was established to relieve the Supreme Court of some of its caseload. The South Carolina Court of Appeals does not try cases, but hears appeals from the decisions of the circuit and family courts. If one side in a case thinks it was not treated fairly in the lower court, it can appeal the case, take it to a higher court for rehearing, to the Court of Appeals. This court has 9 judges elected by the General Assembly for 6-year terms. The top tier of courts, the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is the highest appeals court in the state. Almost certainly its word is final on a legal issue. Despite the Court of Appeals taking much of its workload, the High Court still hears many complex cases. It also supervises the admission of new attorneys to the practice of law, sets standards of ethical conduct for the profession, and disciplines lawyers and judges who engage in unethical behavior. The Supreme Court is composed of a Chief Justice and 4 Associate Justices. They are elected for 10-year terms by the General Assembly and are eligible for re-election an unlimited number of times. In practice, re-election is highly likely, and justices usually serve until they choose to retire. Judicial independence. Although the Supreme Court is appointed and funded by the General Assembly, it has a fair degree of independence. Before the 1970s, the independence of courts in South Carolina was questionable, with judges being so closely tied to the legislature. Almost all judges were elected directly from the General Assembly by the General Assembly. After the constitutional reforms of the 1970s, candidates for a judgeship must be investigated by the Judicial Merit Screening Commission to determine whether they would be good judges. The General Assembly almost always elects a judge from the Screening Commission's 3 top candidates. This is a vast improvement in the selection process and contributes to a growing independence of the judiciary. Do you remember? Number 1. Define in sentence form, conference committee, patronage, probable cause. Number 2. Generally speaking, what is the role of the governor in South Carolina? Number 3. What are the duties of the South Carolina Supreme Court?